I do. You're ripping me off, and I didn't deserve it because I didn't do nothing wrong. You're probably sitting on pipeline driving right back forth, get someone in the 40 miles or whatever it is. I never saw the sign. I saw it 55, and I was doing 57. That's all I know. Now, just give me the damn thing, and I'll look at the day. If I'm working, I'll pay the fine because I can't afford to take a day off. And if I'm not working, I'll plead not guilty because I know well I'm not guilty. There. Now, are you a state or local? Looks like you're a state trooper. Get back and pick up some more guys and run up the deficit on the working man. Just give me the damn thing. Let me get out of here.
What I need you to do is sign the X so I can explain this to you.
There ain't no explain. I got picked up for speeding before. You're guilty and you pay the fine and hope your insurance don't go up. And you try not to speed the next time. And that's what I've been trying to do for 4 or 5 years, and it's worked damn good. Do I run into you, you a**?
Green copies for your record, sir.
I don't... All right.
White copy needs to be mailed in within 20 days.
Okay.
Read the back of this hard copy. This will explain how you can have a trial if you want. On the back, that will explain it. Attaches an envelope. See? Put a stamp on that, you mail that in. They'll tell you what to do.
Well, I can afford the stamp.
The fine's right here, sir. It's $137.50.
You're crazy! I can't! You're crazy! My wife took money out of her damn account where she's working to pay my insurance so I wouldn't get picked up. You're crazy!
If you don't pick this up, sir, I'm going to summon you for littering.
Are you crazy? I won't do this meeting, you damn $107! Right!
There's some more right there.
I've never heard of a phone like that in my life, you damn you.
Well, there you have it, an on-the-highway confrontation between an angry working man and a cop. And the angry working man was very angry, and I think the cop was on Quaaludes. That's about as cool a cop as I ever heard. If that would have been a black woman, she'd have been dead. Just kidding.
Something right here and now. It may be hot tonight, but it's going to get hotter for a whole lot of people. This here little town's going to burn. What I mean, it's going to burn the conscience of the country and put forth a light that everyone and everybody's going to see and feel. This town I'm talking about. Caxton! Yeah! People, something happened today. 10 Negroes went into the Caxton High School and sat with the white children there. Nobody stopped them. Nobody turned them out. And you know what they're saying that means? They're saying that you all don't give a darn whether the whites mix with the blacks because you didn't fight against it. Well, I say, how can somebody fight what he doesn't see? They've kept the facts away from you. Cheated and deceived every one of you. They filled your heads with filthy lies and kept you in the dark so that when you finally do wake up, why, we're sorry, but it's just too late. All right. Now, I'm associated Patrick Henry Society, which is an organization dedicated to giving the people the truth. What I'm going to tell you is going to make your blood boil. Because I'm going to show you that the way this country is going to go depends entirely and wholly and completely on you.
You got it!
you all know that there was peace and quiet in the South before the NAACP started stirring up trouble. But what you don't know is that this so-called advancement of colored people is now and has always been nothing but a communist front headed by a Jew who hates America and doesn't make any bones about it either. Well, the commies didn't waste a second. They knew only too well, friends, that the quickest way to cripple a country is to mongrelize it. So they poured all the millions of dollars the Jews could get for them into this one thing, desegregation. They went to the courts. Now, Judge Silver, who is a Jew and is known to have leftist leanings.
Who says so?
The record says so. Look it up. Abraham Silver, for one thing, belongs to the Quill and Pen Society, which receives its funds indirectly from Moscow. So what did the judge do? Went right ahead and ordered integration for the Caxton High School. Your mayor and the governor could have stopped it, but they didn't have the guts. Now, you may think the problem is simply whether we're going to allow 10 Negroes to go to our schools. That's only a small part. I'm in a position to know because the Patrick Henry Society has studied the whole thing. The real problem, whether you like it or not, is whether you're going to sit back and let desegregation spread throughout the entire South. And it's an indisputable fact that there could be no other result. The Negroes will literally, and I do mean literally, control the South. The vote will be theirs. You'll have black mayors and black policemen the way they do in Chicago and New York already. Like is not a black governor and black doctors to deliver your babies. If they find time, that is. And that's the way it'll be. Did you ever stop to think about that? When you let those 10 enter your school, did you? Now let me ask you. Do you people want niggers taken over?
No!
And are you willing to fight this thing down to the last ditch and keep fighting until it's over? And I am willing to fight with you.
Why, Mr. Kramer?
Why? Because I'm an American, sir, and I love my country. And I'm willing to give my life, if that be necessary, to see that my country stays free, white, and American!
Well, I agree with you, Mr. Bill Shatner. Yeah, I'll tell you, you are good in Star Trek and you're a good racist white boy. Good going there, man. And you're not too bad at promoting hotels around the country either. Well, let's take a little trip down the interesting road of Jew journalists that want to infiltrate the younger set of white racists worldwide. And this one was by Joseph Bernstein of BuzzFeed, a news reporter who thinks he's pretty cool. Becoming a member of a private mobile group chat for white supremacist teenagers was surprisingly easy. There was no secret password. There was no initiation. I didn't need to recite any Aryan pride credos. disparage any minorities or even divulge my identity, which is probably a good thing, since I'm a 30-year-old reporter with a last name that isn't going to fool anybody. No, all I had to do was join up was to create an account on Kik. It's K-I-K, the mobile messaging service that boasts more than 200 million users, as many humans as there are in Brazil. And then I had to have a 14-line chat with the gatekeeper to the group, a guy who calls himself Pa, P-A. It went exactly like this. Hey, can I join the Stormfront group? Pa. Yeah, you affiliated with any Aryan gangs? Nah. Religious in any way? Not particularly. Like how? I don't really go to church or anything. So you'd be Christian, sort of like me, though you don't bother going to mass, kind of person. Yeah, that sounds about right. Where are you from? Maryland. All right, I'm from Ireland. I'll add you in, so. Oh, cool, thanks, Pa. All right, then. With that, I was free to observe white pride worldwide, where every day 50 mostly anonymous teenage users, claiming to be teenagers, or most likely some combination thereof, gather in a rolling discussion of the imperiled future of the white race, the nefarious influence of the immigrants and the hot-blooded interlopers dating back to the Romans and Celtic Ireland, and the dangers posed by Jewish control of contemporary culture. They also discuss selfie sticks, steel beams, and rare peeps. It's 2015, and they are teenagers. I learned of the White Pride Worldwide through the thread in the youth subsection of Stormfront, the Internet's leading white nationalist forum. In the aftermath of last month's massacre at the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, dozens of reporters, including myself, swarmed the white supremacist website, or the web, in an attempt to track terrorist Dylann Roof's ideological roots. Youth, dedicated to the white nationalist issues among teens, was a natural place to try to figure out how the old ideas of white supremacy are being translated to the new generation, to Roof's generation. While federal authorities have disclosed that Roof was in contact with white supremacists online, he doesn't seem to have left behind much writing on the web besides his now infamous 2,500-word manifesto. That document, trotted out, tried and true, even hoary tropes of the American white supremacism, with the exception of a few mentions of the Internet, much of it could have been written at any point since the end of Jim Crow. And while that could well turn out to be the extent of his online communication, my time with White Power Worldwide convinced me that our picture of the white supremacist Internet is strikingly outdated, incomplete. For all the press it has received in recent weeks, Stormfront is old and ugly technology, a web forum and a complimentary talk show run by the host by a 61-year-old former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, whom some posters on the White Power Worldwide deride as an old crank. The youth subforum receives a few posts today. On the other hand, the Kik group is optimized, instantaneous, integrated. Some days see hundreds of posts. This is the white supremacism that looks like today's social internet, comprising many forms of media and users from around the world. Weirdly irreverent, continuous. As one poster who said he was 18 years old living in Stockholm told me, we used it because we were able to communicate across borders and time zones instantly without delay of a forum or a website. This shouldn't come as a surprise. While the basic messages of white supremacy remain constant, the media by which they are delivered change with technology from fabricated first-hand pamphlets, the protocols of the Elders of Zion, to the mass market paperbacks, the Turner Diaries. White supremacist messages migrated to ham radio, entered the digital era on bulletin board systems like the Liberty Bell Net, skipped over to Usenet groups, and then made the jump to the World Wide Web on sites like Stormfront. But today, of course, it's in an app, and an instant delivery messaging app, one that is likely valued at billions of dollars at that. This is the white supremacism of the future, and for 2 weeks I had a front row seat. The first lesson I learned about white pride worldwide was to turn off push notifications. The volume of chat and the group produces is overwhelming no matter how you consume it. One message at a time or in great big chunks, it was disorienting. Sometimes it took 5 minutes to catch up reading just to figure out what the hell everyone was talking about. The group is so prolific in part because its members span time zones and ocean. In 2 weeks, I observed the chat. I found members from the U.S., Canada, England, Ireland, Sweden, and the Netherlands. There are almost certainly more nations represented. That lends credence to the argument recently made in several places that the parochial white hate groups are becoming a thing of the past and that white supremacy has become well and truly global. It led to some strange admixtures. At one point, Pa changed his posting handle to Ian Smith was based. For the record, that made the administrator of the group, an Irish teenager, pay tribute to the Prime Minister of Rhodesia in language borrowed from a Black Bay Area rapper. Yeah, I saw Ian Smith when he visited San Diego, California, many, many years ago. I was got very close to him, but I didn't get to talk to him. However, he betrayed Rhodesia anyhow, so I'm glad I didn't talk to him. Though a handful of posters preemptively mourned the Confederate flag, good old-fashioned American racism was relatively rare, perhaps because there were so few posters with whom it would resonate. Yes, there were requisite repugnant jokes about the intelligence of African Americans and the work habits of Mexican Americans, and yes, there were requisite conspiracy theories about Jewish dominance of finance and the media, but much more common were the discussions about the relative racial purity of different white nations and the dissolution of white European culture. This led to some incredibly strange debates. Right after Pa gave me access to White Power Worldwide, I found myself trying to follow a passionate argument about the effect of the medieval Viking raids on Gaelic Ireland. Pa, who posts on Stormfront as Heathen Irish Gael, was trying to convince another poster, a Dutch girl named Matilda, in 1488, that Norsemen, much romanticized among white nationalists, had committed atrocities against his ancestors. Well, they burnt my country to the ground, sacked the church, and burnt my village to the ground, sacked my family. Matilda, 1488, whose profile picture looks suspiciously like Tinderbot, responded that basically Vikings will be Vikings. No other occupation was available to them. Farming was a no-go. I'm sure it wasn't personal. Well, the fact is that the Vikings did a lot of farming, but they ran out of room to farm. It wasn't that they didn't want to continue farming. It wasn't so much they wanted to go to sea and on their raids, but they ran out of room to farm, is the true story. Anyhow, this got Pa going. They wanted to destroy Christendom here. They burnt and kicked my mom's family out of Limerick and made an exclusionary zone for Gaels outside its walls. My village still bears the destruction of the Danes. Pa posted a picture of the ruins set against a blue sky. But next day, Matilda had quit the group. Losing a female contributor wasn't good. Later on, Pa would joke, "One girl wanted, just one, but it wasn't catastrophic." As one frequent poster reasoned, she was hot, but she wasn't Eva Braun. Anyway, these kinds of arguments were rare, and only happened when white-on-white violence tugged at the seams of the group's ideology. Whenever these disputes did flare up, as one did about the war in the Ukraine, there was always someone there to remind the group of its true function. Trolling is a major feature of white power worldwide, and it was difficult to distinguish its members from the frequent posters on any misanthropic channel or subreddit festering in the penetralia of the internet. Where do you get these words? For whom? They're almost Hebrew. Not. For whom racism is a shock tactic rather than a belief system. A lot of mocking language in the group. You transgender pansexual mocha fabra pacino latte fluid based homosexual? No, you CIS scum. I'm a trans hippopotamus. Was completely of a piece with the trolls of the wider internet. The favorite pastime of white power worldwide is joining with other kike groups and harassing their members. Targets while I was in white power worldwide included a transgender group called No Dudes, No Nudes, and a group for suicidal teens. There was something so surreal about the kike group called White Pride Worldwide attacking a group with the LGBT hashtag about in-group, out-group dynamics that were entirely virtual and yet rendered so completely literal through the naming conventions of the app-based internet that I felt like I was watching a dark, dark satire rather than real humans tapping furiously at iPhone screens. This surreality made me wonder if the posters themselves were old enough to distinguish fantasy from reality, whether their involvement with the group was a form of adolescent role-playing. The users regularly posted selfies of one another, often with arms flexed and jaws clenched, sometimes shirtless. A 16-year-old named Dave was the most frequent selfie poster, and at one point he uploaded a series of portraits in a black-and-white floral print kimono and a blonde wig. His intention was to cosplay as a manga character. He's holding a manga in his right hand and has a blade up his sleeve, but the effect was drag-like, and the other posters made gentle fun of him. Another poster wrote longingly about his desire to look more Aryan, and he showed the group the blue-colored contacts he bought it to that end. To say the group was homoerotic, had homoerotic undertones, would be an understatement. At times, white power worldwide simply struck me as a way for lonely, bored, and confused teenagers to blow off steam and to try on new identities, politically, sexually, and otherwise. I would later find out that the white power worldwide had splintered from a more extreme kike group 3 months earlier, after skinheads in the former group objected to the part Jewish ancestor of a frequent poster. A lot of the chat in the group had obviously nothing to do with white supremacy. The members shared arty travel photos, swapped computer advice, bemoaned their lack of success with girls. Paul talked about his desire to become a manga artist. Another poster wrote about traveling around Europe to teach English. Some posters pondered joining the military. On July 4th, Dave posted a selfie holding a rifle in one hand and a Miller Lite in the other, wearing a redneck's uniform of red and black checked flannel and a white baseball cap that read Heritage. In the top corners of the image, he was superimposed with a Confederate flag and a NASCAR logo. Irony is not quality I tend to associate with hardcore race warriors. And yet every time I found myself thinking the members of the group were just dumb and harmless kids, they would bring the subject back to guns. Guns were a major preoccupation with white power worldwide. Which countries made the best ones? Which gun dealers were sympathetic to white nationalism? Where to stock up on ammunition? Though the posters heaped scorn on Dylan Roof, they seem more ambivalent about the mass child killer Andras Breivik, and also about Varg Vikernes, the notorious Norwegian musician and neo-Nazi who served 16 years in prison for murder and arson. He also burnt down a bunch of churches. I've exchanged emails with Varg, wrote one poster, and he's nice. And they kept posting a photoshopped image that they found hilarious about murdering gay people. Pa in particular talked about guns a lot. He asked the group what people were doing to prepare for any wars. He spoke of a need to purchase a British assault vest, preferably one with a place I could put a knife by my left shoulder. He fantasized about murdering a Jewish-Irish politician. The juxtapositions of the chat were absurd, the way terminally ironic internet humor sat next to actual hatred, sometimes even within the same sentence or the image. Even the teens in the group noticed it. During Pa's rant, Keaton joked, quote, "Could you imagine Pa shooting up Ireland and the authorities going through his phone and finding all the memes and rare peeps?" After 2 weeks of watching White Pride Worldwide, I posted for the first time. That was for the few reasons. First, Pa kept threatening to ban me for lurking. Kike groups take a maximum of 50 people, which means administration constantly needs to prune non-contributing members. Second, while I hadn't lied or misrepresented myself to the group, I hadn't communicated with any of them except Pa. I did want to ask them some direct questions, and to do that I had to introduce myself. So he posted this, the Jew. "Hey everyone, my name is Joe Bernstein. I'm a reporter with BuzzFeed News, and I'm working on a story about white nationalism among young people. I was hoping anyone who wants would... would say here or in direct message what brought you to this group and why it's important to you. Thanks so much." The reaction was swift. One poster found and posted my BuzzFeed's bio and asked, "Will my picture get on BuzzFeed?" Another wrote, "Fuck off, Kike. I ain't helping you spread your Jewish propaganda." The first reconsidered, "Go away, Joe." And just like that, I was removed from the group. I didn't ask any questions, at least not right away. Over the next 24 hours, a handful of members reached out to me. First, it was a poster named Dos Volt from Sweden, who was cordial and described his opposition to the systematic deconstruction of European culture and heritage. Then a poster called Comrade Swastika sent me a YouTube titled Auschwitz versus science, and in a tone I found both insultingly pedantic and somehow touching, informed me, quote, "The Holocaust never happened in the way you were told and brainwashed. I shall not speak to you until you have watched this documentary. From there, we shall continue this chat." Next, a poster with the handle of Confederate Cam and a Confederate flag for a photo wrote to say, "Hey, you better not publish this article, you hear?" I imagined him shaking his fist or at least sending a fist emoji. Finally, at 3:37 a.m., the morning after, I, as he put it, revealed myself. Dave messaged me. "Hello," he wrote. "Not to be hostile, get all the info you're looking for." I was glad Dave contacted me due to his role as the goofus of chat, the screwy way he played dress-up in his obvious devotion to manga and nerd culture. I had him pegged as a good one, or at least the least bad one, at misguided but possibly decent boy in a very regrettable stage of his life. But there was something about Dave that bothered me that threw this judgment off. He sometimes shared elaborate prank ideas with the group, like secret racist jackass sketches in which he would play a white power Johnny Knoxville. In one, he wrote that he was going to a party of a Jewish classmate and, to the delight of the group, asked whether he should goad her father into talking about the Holocaust. In another scenario, Dave shared, he said he would go to downtown Philadelphia with a Confederate flag and a GoPro and provoke black persons to attack him. Quote, "I can release it saying, 'Peaceful protester attacked by angry racist individual,'" he had written. It was the only poster on WPWW who actually posted tangible plans, ones that seemed capable of making the leap from fantasy to reality. I asked Dave whether he really believed all the stuff on the white pride worldwide. He responded that yes, he largely did. "I'm one of the few National Socialists left in the group. Not a skinhead, just NS. And yes, I, to an extent, believe the white race is superior. That does not mean I want genocide among the others." Then I asked Dave if he had carried out his provocations, which he referred to as social experiments. He said he hadn't. He wasn't stupid enough to reveal his belief as a National Socialist to his classmates. As far as the flag stunt, he told me he was still collecting supplies. Later, I found Dave's Instagram. There were dozens of pictures of him cosplaying in downtown Philadelphia of painted Warhammer figurines of Dave shoulder to shoulder with non-white classmates looking happy. There were also photos of Hitler and of the German and Polish officials signing the non-aggression pact between those nations in 1934. I didn't see how these things could coexist, how Dave could be an affable screwball in one obviously multicultural environment while posting crap like that on Instagram. But then again, he had a portal in his pocket to a world of words and the media that embodied the exact same tension between the frivolity of plurality of internet culture and the very serious hatreds of white nationalism. Maybe I started to think, that's just what the future of the white supremacy looks like on a medium so fast and so porous, contradiction, absurd, occasionally terrifying, and comfortable with it. Joe Bernstein is a senior technology reporter for BuzzFeed News and is based in New York City. Bernstein reports on and writes about gaming industry and the web culture. You can reach him at joe.bernstein@buzzfeed.com. Well, you might be a little bit shocked, but I found that to be a pretty good article. I found him to be pretty objective in seeing things the way they really are unfolding out there in on the web and so forth. And some of his views there cover a hell of a lot of the people, of course, in the right wing. They're just sort of hobbyists and experimenters, and much like a lot of the skinheads I ran into, that they got all hot on being a skinhead for a couple of years, and then they were gone. And next thing you know, some of them are even married to black people, women. So there's only a fraction of the white racist separatist struggle that are professional and fanatical and keep their mind on the ball. And that's nothing to be worried about, nothing to cry about, because that's the way all movements are. Whether it had been Castro in Cuba, which he only had a few guys up in the hills until the New York Times made him a superhero, and he gathered quite a few people. But the difference, of course, with Castro, he was demanding some action, and they were going out and raiding police stations and stuff like that. And, of course, this type of Internet activity most of the time never gets into that. It's just, you know, talking like a lot of the critics say, talk, 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 talk. But there again, if it hadn't been for the New York Times, Castro would have been a non-person. He would have faded out, and Batista would have remained in power. But that's just an example of, it's only a few people in any ideological struggle who carry the war to the enemy, or who they believe is the enemy. And that's just the way it goes. And groups like this, these big websites, like Don Black's and David Duke's, they collect hundreds and thousands of these people coming through the front door and go right out the back door. Now, however, nothing is all bad. And there's always a few, like many of my friends, we started out as just anti-communist, in fact, right-wing conservative Republicans, and then anti-communist, and gradually evolved through stages till we're, a lot of us that survived are at the same position as each other today, knowing the whole score and knowing what's going on. But there's been hundreds of people fell by the wayside on the way. I mean, it's unbelievable how many people I've known over the years that swore absolute, dedication to the white struggle, that they're long gone, haven't heard from them in years and years. So it's not something to feel terribly bad about, as long as you know what you are. The main thing is you know what you are, you know what you believe, and you know what you want, and you know what you're prepared to do if you decide to do it. And to be looking around to see who's following you is a waste of time. If they're not walking shoulder to shoulder with you, they're not serious. I mean, there's thousands of these people out there that talk about white separatism and white supremacism and all that stuff, but they'll walk behind you in single file, but they'll never walk shoulder to shoulder with you. And the only effect that can be a positive is shoulder to shoulder combat, where you all have a chance to lose what you've got materially or whatever, lose your contacts, lose your friends, or even lose your life. That's going to be a very small part of any group or any so-called group. So anyhow, I wanted to read that to you. So even with all this nonsense and silliness, there are people who come out of it and do the right thing or think the right thing. And these teenagers, they're listening. And that's why we have to keep talking to them, because they're absorbing this information, and 9 out of 10 will fade away, but there'll be one, and that's the one we want. okay? Because we need lone wolf leaders. Lone wolf leaders is what we need. Quietly going about their business, quietly going to school, quietly going to college, quietly serving in the military, quietly serving on Wall Street and so forth. But they know what the score is, and they're going to be in the right position when needed. I thought this was quite interesting. It's a article about The Walking Dead, the television show that lots of people enjoy, and I've watched it sometimes. Let me read this for you, if I can get myself in the right position. The Walking Dead, diving in the world after tomorrow. There's a lot of allegorical stuff in these shows. That's the reason I like a lot of them, because the writers are very good. The writers are very good at guiding you through bad things and good things, you know. But you got to pick out the good things and leave the bad things. In 2010, AMC offered a series adapting from a comic book that has the same effect on the net, a small neutron bomb in a forest full of deer. The Walking Dead, or March of the Death, describes 5 years now of fighting for the lives of a team of survivors who survived what some fond virtual survivalism calls zombie apocalypse, and his assortment of dead, undead, and the above all, live dying. Zombie, yet it is a term that never appears in the series, dubbed marauders or flesh-eating, and for good reason. We're not here facing a banal story of undead, those eternal, putrescent, but animated corpses, aggressive, but lacks any consciousness, disorganized, but many that the protagonist, mostly burly former GIs and hilarious, ending up covering rotten brains, they just burst the skull that housed the large burst of 7.62. In reality, these rovers appear progressively in the series as a secondary element, see optional, because if it's them who are causing the end of the world, are the protagonists who are responsible for creating this world after. Because, yes, this series is not strictly speaking on the end of the world, but the end of a world, ours. Frank Darabont and Robert Kirkman bring us face to face with our own society, our own customs, our moral gentrified West, computerized 21st century of death and the need of survival, and above all, the price of this survival. I think the Middle East is creating this kind of a scenario. Or reminds me of a film from the 30s, and I don't remember the name of the very famous actor, but most people today wouldn't remember him. It was based on the end of the world and people catching what they called the walking sickness, and they would just walk like zombies until they died, until they dehydrated or starved to death and dropped dead. But anyhow, it was a great film. It's called Things of the World to Come, something like that. Thus, a Sheriff Rick, whose uniform he wears today, has less value in terms of authority than he has for the 357 belt, wakes up in a deserted hospital in a city of ruins, emptied with its inhabitants normal, and will do everything to join a group of survivors and be reunited with his family. Thus, Merle Biker, neo-Nazi and drug notorious ultra-violent, will the young Korean comrades Glenn or Massive T-Dog, you would think out of a rap video on the west coast of 80, but with more guns, or that Daryl, a backwoods redneck on the edge of medieval Baudry, ostracized by modern society, will be the great use when it comes to tracking game, getting a camp, or smashing rangers' skulls without thinking, It is that this good guy had a family, or do that by making this act an unprecedented violence. My super ego, he can solve this Oedipus complex. Yeah, you can go into this series and pick your hero, or pick a couple of heroes, but you're probably not going to pick all of them as heroes. I sort of like combining the neo-Nazi with the redneck myself. Willingly or unwillingly, these survivors, but not miraculously provided, will have a long way together, and whether your hands are dirty, in this world, no place for the weak, incompetent, or even idealistic. I like it. You're going to weed out the crap fast. They only have, and this is an allegory of when things go to hell and people are hungry and they have no water, they have no food, and what they'll do, they'll do anything. And they'll be even worse than these monsters walking around. I mean, because they'll walk around a lot faster and they'll run a lot faster and they will conspire much faster and be much more effective. That's the way it's coming. And so this is sort of mediocre, really. They only have two missions: to survive until the next day and recreate civilization. Well, I don't know whether we want to recreate civilization the way it's turned out. I think maybe we ought to try a little different way. If necessary, by abutting those who oppose them, not necessarily Rangers. A series, therefore, more profound than what we were accustomed, zombie movies until then, which offers truly crafted characters, which it is easy to identify. Not too much. They have a clear tendency to fall faster than flies. The number of seasons can track the evolution of our wealth comrades and further deepen their history, their mentality, their past. And automatically the link that we have with them and our quest, no less a search for a hypothetical serum to treat the infected population as a sustainable, secure housing to resettle and relearn to live rather than survive. Well, I submit that the young people of today should identify with the survival leaders of this group, rather than worrying about Adolf Hitler and Mussolini and Stalin and all that crap. That's over with. They were pikers. the hillbilly redneck and the neo-Nazi and the kind that are perfectly able to survive, that's who the youth should identify with. And I think that there are thousands out there that are, without being out in the open, white supremacist. You'd be a white survivalist or whatever. Without falling into the most vapid moralizing, this is a work that explains much better than the writings of the author's films made by bourgeois Ceylon how a society and what can human beings, at the best as in the worst, in the adaptation as in resignation. No, a lot of these Hollywood writers are tremendous, and I don't think they get enough credit. I know they don't get credit from the working class right wing because they don't understand. Now, you have to look through the basic image of the film or whatever the story and pick out your heroes and the crap you just leave by the way, by the side of the road. And but these survival films and the end of the world stuff are great ideological training programs if you learn to read them right and watch them right. And somebody out there knows, and they're not all on the system side, believe me. There's a lot of this kind of stuff is terrific, and I hope we see more of it. I hope we see more of it. This article was originally came out in French, and we translated it, but it's funny how they add on some stories and some short articles, contributors, about these Negroes and the big muscle men Negroes that they're going to push those guys forward. Let me tell you something. There are Negroes that can fight like hell, and but most of them don't have the capacity to think abstractly and so forth. So they're going to, in a situation, do or die, just like in ancient history. The ruthless Cro-Magnon is going to wipe them out if they get in the way. However, I have no doubt that some of the white separatists in a really bad situation could work with some blacks. Now, don't get me wrong, that doesn't mean race mix. But like I've said before, if the black militants want to move against Washington, be my guest. And we would not, I would not stand in their way. I would not risk one white life to get in the way of black militants attacking the system. If they attacked, however, the white working class and people who deserve to live, then we would have a problem. And when I say deserve to live, I'm talking about pretty small percentage of the white race, to be perfectly honest, and a bigger percentage of the black race. And I think if we don't watch out, we may have to depend on part of the Asian race as co-conspirators. If not, they may become our masters. So that's something to think about. Well, here's an interesting one. Mainz, Germany. Came from NBC News. Nearly eight decades after Adolf Hitler hosted the 36 Olympics in Berlin, the all-Jewish European Maccabi Games will take place in the same city, including events at venues built by the Nazis. More than 2,100 Jewish athletes from 39 countries will compete in Europe's biggest Jewish... Wait a minute here. Biggest Jewish sports event at the so-called Olympic Park, a site constructed for the 11th Olympiad, at which Hitler aimed to camouflage his racist anti-Semitic ideology to present Germany as a tolerant nation. But the Nazis continued to exclude German Jews from all sporting events. 2 weeks before the games, the German officials told Greta Bergmann, a Jewish athlete who was a favorite at the high jump, that she had been denied a place on the German team. In the end, only part Jewish fencer Helene Mayer was allowed to represent Germany in 36. I would have been a loser either way, said former high jumper Margaret Lambert, known by her maiden name as Greta Bergmann, who had been denied a spot on Germany's 36 team because of her Jewish heritage. Had I won, there would have been such an insult against the German psyche. How can a Jew be good enough to win Olympics? Then I would have had to be afraid for my life, I'm sure. Lambert said in 2008 documentary, had I lost, I would have been a joke. The colorful Jewish event, which begins Monday, is scheduled to include a Guinness Book World Record attempt for the largest Friday evening Shabbat ceremony. Holding the Maccabi Games in Berlin is a very important sign, it sure as hell is, said 61-year-old German Jew Leo Frieden, who hopes to win a medal with the country's golf team. We will be able to highlight that Jewish life is part of the German society and that Jews have not been chased away again. Friedman's parents survived the Holocaust and were liberated from a Nazi concentration camp later, the end of World War II, but chose to stay in Germany. My parents taught me to look forward, to be tolerant, but also to be proud of my Jew heritage, said Friedman, who was participating the first time in the Maccabi Games at age 18. The games aim at spreading a sense of equality. There's that word again. and fairness, there's that word again, and showcase the newfound Jewish confidence, arrogance, you might say, to the German and European public, according to an announcement for the event, which will also be supported by many non-Jewish volunteers. Don't worry, they'll have everybody out there supporting this. Mostly Aryans. While advocates of this year's location believe that the historic and socio-political importance of the European Maccabi Games is enormous for Germany, organizers admit that not all Jewish officials were in favor of hosting it at the historic location. Don't worry, nobody's going to do anything about it. Germany's so pro-Jew now, it's unbelievable. There were some critical voices in the Jewish community in Europe who did not support Berlin as the event site. Oren Osterher, the director of the organization committee, told NBC News, but I would say that the younger generation was able to convince the older generation that it is right, and it's time is right, and to hold the European Maccabi Games, Jewish Games in Berlin without forgetting the past. The official opening ceremony on Tuesday will be held at the so-called Waldbühne, which was the event cited for the gymnastics competition of 1936, and the fencing championship will take place in Kuppelsaal, where Jewish athlete André Kabos from Hungary won the gold medal in individual and team saber at the Berlin Olympics. During the last two Maccabi Games, we saw a huge increase in popularity of our outfits that read Deutschland or Germany. People always ask us to swap clothes after the games, said 28-year-old Ben Liesgeld, who will be competing in the soccer tournament. At first, I was a bit ambivalent about the location because we should not forget the past, but it also shows, oh, never forget the past. Shows the development process in German society and our positive future, the Berlin resident said. Forget about your future. Germany's going to be drowned in wogs from Africa. It's being drowned in wogs from Africa. So you can move your Jews back into Berlin, but it's going to be a ghetto one of these days. And it's probably mostly that already. On the sidelines of the sporting events, organizers have also set up an education program for young visitors between 14 and 18. Of course, you know how brainwashing goes. Propaganda, which will include a visit to the former Nazi concentration camp at Sachsenhausen. You see, that's the education. You know, like nobody's ever read about Sachsenhausen. Already, enough already, as the Jews would say, enough. Amid 25% increase in anti-Jew crimes compared to last year, and a rise in neo-Nazi violence, Berlin will face increased security measures during the event, which runs until August the 5th. I wonder if the German taxpayers, the working class, are really into the spending all that money defending this thing. Oh, yeah, they are, because there's still a big percentage of Christians there. As long as the Christians are there, they're going to support these Jews. As long as we increase police presence and special security measures, we cannot speak of normality, Friedman said. But all the athletes I've talked to are looking forward to the games, to which I say, let the games begin. Well, there's a hell of a lot of good news on the web from all over the world. Great news, because worse is better, remember, boys and girls, and now that we found out that Trump allegedly tried to rape his wife, oh, that's another kettle of fish there, man. That's terrible. Evidently, she said he just held her down. This thing is going to get crazy. I'm looking forward to a year of comedy for this campaign. Comedy. Do not, whatever you do, take it serious. Please. Anyhow, I'll be back with you tomorrow on Wotan's Day. Terrible Tommy saying 14-5, and like I say, for now, worse is better.
Cheer up, man. You know what they say. Things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your life chance anyhow. So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath. Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life.
Come on, Dad, cheer up.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life.
First thing that we see, you know.
Always look on the bright side of life.
You know, you come from nothing, you go back to nothing. What are you lost?
Always look on the bright side of life.
Nothing will come from nothing, you know what I say?
Oh, here up, the old bugger.
Come on, give us a grin.
There you are.
See? End of the film. Incidentally, this record's available in the foyer.
Someone's
got to live as well, you know? What do you think pays for this rubbish?
Always look on the bright side of life.
I told him.